The art of communication is the language of leadership. That's a quote from James Humes, and it really hits home, doesn't it?
It really does. Makes you think about the weight our words carry, especially when you're trying to guide people.
Exactly. Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive. This is where we take your sources, your notes, your research, and really dig in to find the most important insights. We turn all that information into, well, hopefully, real understanding.
And today, we're diving into a specific chapter, Chapter 20, titled Leadership, from Scott Howard Swain's book, A Practical Empath, Rewire Your Mind.
Right. The whole book is about using empathy to essentially rewire your thinking. But our mission today is pretty focused. We want to see how the Practical Empathy Practice System, they call it PEP, provides a framework for, well, effective and empathetic leadership.
And it applies in so many different situations, which is what makes it interesting.
So before we get too deep, maybe we should quickly sketch out what PEP actually is.
Good idea. So at its heart, PEP is really a method for listening and speaking, both to yourself and to others.
And the aims are pretty big, right? Liberation, understanding, connection.
Responsibility, clarity, empowerment.
Yeah.
It's ambitious. But the core pieces are actually quite simple.
Okay, what are they?
First, it's about observation without evaluation. So really paying attention to what's being said, mostly their words, but also, you know, the nonverbal stuff, the subconscious body language.
Okay, observing without judging. Got it.
Then it's recognizing feelings, yours, and making an educated guess about theirs.
Feelings, right. And the last part.
Identifying the underlying values or needs, again, yours, and guessing theirs. And a key thing in PEP is that values and needs are basically seen as the same thing, interchangeable.
Values and needs as synonyms. Interesting.
Oh.
Okay, so observation, feelings, needs, that's the core.
That's the bedrock of it, yeah.
Now, this leadership chapter, chapter 20, it builds on earlier stuff in the book.
It does. It pulls together a lot of the personal transformation ideas and applies them directly to leading others.
And one of the first things it hits on is this idea of being and sounding natural. Why is that so important for a leader?
Well, think about it. People are drawn to authenticity, aren't they? When a leader speaks genuinely, in their own dialect, so to speak, not some corporate jargon.
People connect better.
Exactly. It builds clarity, confidence. Your team trusts you more when they feel you're being real, especially when you're representing them or the mission.
That makes sense. Authenticity builds trust.
And that authenticity ties into something else the chapter really emphasizes, a leader's capacity to move from anger to peace.
Emotional regulation. That sounds crucial.
It's huge. Staying calm, staying rational, especially when things are hitting the fan. It's not just about feeling better yourself. It actually leads to smarter, more tactical decisions.
And it probably affects the team too.
Oh, absolutely. The book talks about this trickle-down effect. When a leader stays calm, it inspires confidence. It sets a tone. The whole team starts approaching challenges more rationally, more calmly. It creates a much more stable environment.
That ripple effect sounds incredibly powerful. But what's the biggest hurdle for leaders trying to stay calm in a real crisis? I mean, it sounds good on paper.
Oh, it's definitely tough in practice. Often, it's the leader's own, maybe unexamined emotional reactions, plus the immense pressure to just know everything, to have the answers immediately.
Yeah, I can see that.
And the book tackles this through the lens of intuition, truth detection. Leaders rely so much on information from others. Right?
Constantly.
But how do you know what's reliable? Who to trust? The book argues it's not about blind faith, but it's also not about being cynical about everything.
So it's a balance.
It's about honing that intuition, that gut feeling, sharpened by experience and careful observation. It helps you weigh things, assess people, assess situations without jumping to conclusions or, you know, panicking. It's about navigating uncertainty.
Okay, so intuition is a tool for discernment.
Exactly. And this loops back beautifully to earlier ideas in the book, especially the section on politics and why empathize with an enemy.
How does empathizing with an enemy relate to leadership?
Well, think about it. Leaders constantly deal with people who have different views, different strategies, sometimes people they strongly disagree with. The book argues that accepting that other ways exist, even trying to empathize with why someone holds a different view.
Even if you don't agree with their strategy.
Especially then. That ability to approach disagreement with equanimity, with understanding, dramatically increases a leader's capacity to handle diverse personalities and difficult situations.
So it fosters stability.
Stability, trust, a proactive approach rather than a reactive one. It can genuinely build bridges, create partnerships that seemed impossible before. But, and this is critical, the book stresses that acceptance is not agreement.
Right, you mentioned that acceptance isn't agreement. So how does a leader show that acceptance without looking like they're giving in or watering down their own vision? That seems tricky.
It is a fine line. The suggestion from the book is to focus on understanding the values driving the other person. You can say something like, okay, I hear your deep concern for X, or I understand why Y is so important to you in this situation, without actually endorsing their proposed solution.
Acknowledging the why behind their position.
Precisely. And understanding those values then helps a leader to debate and negotiate more effectively. The book sees these not just as arguments, but as tools.
Tools for what?
Tools to back up decisions, to articulate the needs behind those decisions, and ultimately to persuade others to bring them on board. It moves beyond just because I said so.
Which is rarely effective leadership in the long run.
Not usually, no. And this is especially vital in, say, a business environment, which the chapter uses as a key example.
Because leadership there involves so many things.
So many facets. Clear communication, diplomacy, strategic planning, making tough decisions, delegating work, taking calculated risks. All while carrying the weight of the venture's success and, importantly, the livelihoods of the people who work there.
That's a heavy responsibility.
It is, and the book argues PEP provides a really solid foundation for carrying that weight effectively.
Okay, so we've got the principles. Be natural, manage emotions, use intuition, empathize even with opponents, negotiate effectively. Let's make this more concrete. How does PEP look in actual conversations? The book gives examples, right? Mm. Leaders both getting empathy and giving it.
It does, and they're quite illuminating. Let's start with leaders receiving empathy, getting help processing their own challenges.
Okay, like Bob.
Yeah, Bob. He's frustrated. His team isn't unified on a project direction. Someone using PEP with him might observe his tension and say, Bob, sounds like you're feeling really overwhelmed because you're wanting unity and maybe clear direction from the team. Is that hitting the mark?
So observing, guessing the feeling, overwhelmed, and the need, unity, direction.
Exactly. And as they talk, Bob might realize it's not just frustration, but he's maybe losing patience. He wants decisive action. He wishes they showed more conviction. Through this empathetic reflection, he connects with his own values, unity, growth, even his desire to nurture their ability to find answers.
And that leads to an idea.
Right. Instead of imposing his solution, he realizes he could propose a collaborative session, empower them to figure it out together. Big shift.
Okay, another one. How about Ted? Low morale, feeling responsible.
Similar process. An empathizer might reflect, Ted, it sounds like you're feeling pretty concerned, maybe carrying some regret because you really value a positive, thriving work environment for your people.
Acknowledging the feeling, concern, regret, and the value, positive environment.
And just naming that regret, understanding the value behind it can help Ted release some of that emotional burden. It clears his head, lets new ideas surface for how to actually address the morale issue constructively.
What about Alice, trying to please everyone?
Ugh, the consensus trap. PEP could help her see that maybe full consensus isn't the most realistic or even helpful goal. Maybe the need isn't for everyone to agree, but for everyone to feel genuinely heard and valued in the process. Reframing it like that might uncover totally new ways forward.
And Gary, stressed about deadlines.
PEP might help him identify his feeling stress, maybe anxiety, and connect them to his need for, say, reliability and peace of mind. That clarity could lead him to realize, huh, maybe I haven't communicated my expectations or the timelines clearly enough. It shifts focus from blame to actionable steps.
Okay, so those were leaders getting empathy. Now, flipping up, how does a leader use PEP with their team?
This is where it really shines, I think. Take Emily, struggling with new software, feeling, as the book puts it, like an incompetent fool.
Oh, dear. Yeah, we've all been there.
Right. So a leader using PEP observes her struggle, maybe sees the slumped shoulders, hears the frustration. They might gently say, Emily, sounds like you're feeling really overwhelmed, maybe a bit inadequate right now because you really value feeling competent and confident in your work. Am I close?
That sounds much better than just saying, are you having trouble with the software?
Miles better. It validates her feeling and her value. It opens the door. The leader can then ask, would some extra training or maybe pairing you with someone for a bit help you feel more confident and get up to speed? It leads to a solution that addresses the skill and the feeling.
Nice. What about Josh? Feeling underappreciated despite working hard.
PEP listening would pick up on that. The reflection might be, Josh, sounds like you're putting in a lot of effort and you're really wanting some recognition for that hard work, wanting your contributions to be seen and valued.
Naming the need for recognition and value.
Exactly. And often, just having that acknowledged directly allows for a real conversation about how his contributions could be better recognized. Maybe it's public praise, maybe specific feedback, maybe a new opportunity. It becomes collaborative.
Okay, makes sense, Laura. Her ideas aren't being heard.
PEP helps the leader identify her feeling, maybe frustration or disappointment, and her underlying value for contribution, for making an impact. The conversation then isn't just about her ideas, but about how the team can ensure all voices, including hers, are genuinely heard and considered. Maybe changing how meetings are run.
Brian, burnt out from workload.
Empathetic leader identifies the feeling, exhaustion, overwhelm, and the need. balance, support, maybe sustainability. The PEP approach might help Brian himself realize potential changes, maybe delegating more, maybe streamlining a process to improve things rather than just waiting for the boss to fix it.
And one more, Kevin. Having tension with a colleague.
PEP helps the leader understand Kevin's feelings, tension, frustration, and maybe his need for autonomy or feeling competent in handling his own relationships. Instead of jumping in to solve it, the leader's empathy might empower Kevin to figure out how he wants to approach his teammate, giving him space and maybe some PEP-style coaching on how to have that difficult conversation himself.
It really seems to shift the dynamic in so many ways, from problem-solving for people to empowering them.
That's a huge part of it.
And this carries over into more formal situations too, right? Like debates or negotiations. The book suggests PEP can transform these from, you know, adversarial fights into something more productive.
Absolutely. Even when a leader genuinely needs to win an argument or rally support, PEP offers a more effective way.
How so? By understanding the other side?
Primarily, yes. PEP pushes you to genuinely try and see the issue from their perspective, to empathize with their values, their needs, consider their experiences.
It probably helps you counter their arguments better.
It can, sure. But more importantly, it builds rapport. When you show you've genuinely tried to understand where they're coming from, even if you disagree, it signals openness, respect. It can actually make them more willing to listen to your perspective. It acknowledges their viewpoint likely comes from legitimate values.
Okay, but debates get heated. How does PEP handle the emotional side?
It encourages you to acknowledge the feelings directly, both yours and theirs, inappropriate. Naming the emotion can sometimes lower the temperature, but crucially, it helps you dig underneath the emotion to the underlying values or needs.
Why is that so important?
Because if you understand the core values driving their position, you can frame your arguments in a way that speaks to those deeper motivations. You might even find common ground you didn't realize existed.
Ah, finding common ground, that seems key.
Definitely. Debates often get stuck on the points of disagreement. PEP helps you actively look for the overlap in values. The book gives a great phrase template, something like, "It sounds like we actually both share a deep value for X, like human flourishing. We just have different ideas about the best strategy to achieve it." Does that sound right to you?
That reframes the whole conversation.
It really can. Acknowledging their valid points, framing things around shared higher values, it builds trust, it strengthens your own position paradoxically, and leads to much more productive dialogue.
You know, this sounds a lot like the concept of steel manning.
It aligns perfectly. Steel manning, presenting your opponent's argument in its strongest possible form,
is basically a form of deep empathetic listening, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have to understand their motivations, their core values, to represent their view charitably.
Precisely. You go beyond the surface words. You connect with the human reasons behind their stance. It humanizes the opponent, turns it from a fight into, ideally, collaborative problem solving.
And you try to address their emotional tone, their moral concerns, their actual beliefs, not just a straw man version.
Right. And as you said, this isn't just for formal debates. Think about it in intellectual discussions like you hear with someone like Lex Fridman and his guests, or family disagreements or workplace conflicts. It applies everywhere.
So steel manning as PEP, in action during disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Are there things leaders should definitely avoid in these situations, according to the book? Any no-nos?
Oh, yeah. A few clear ones. First, avoid blunt statements like, "you are wrong," or "that is wrong." It just shuts down dialogue.
Treat his defensiveness.
Instantly. Second, don't jump in to counter their points before you've genuinely shown you've heard and understood their perspective, before you've empathized.
Listen first, then respond.
Exactly. And third, be really careful with statistics. The book warns that stats can often be cherry-picked or tweaked to support almost any argument. Use them sparingly, and only when they're clear, relevant, and genuinely add value, not just noise.
Okay, those are really practical warnings. And they seem especially important when things get politically charged or highly emotional. Which brings us to a point about some of the examples in our source material.
Right, we should be crystal clear here.
Yeah, our aim isn't to take sides or endorse any specific political viewpoint discussed in the book's examples. It's purely about showing how PEP works as a tool to find common ground, to uncover those shared human values that often hide beneath very different strategies.
Absolutely. It's about the method, not the specific issue. Should we walk through a couple of those examples thematically, just to illustrate how PEP might reveal that common ground?
Yeah, let's do that briefly. Healthcare, always a hot topic.
Okay, so you have debates about government intervention versus free markets, seemingly opposite poles. But PEP might help both sides recognize they likely share underlying values for things like efficiency, quality care, innovation, and affordability. The strategies differ wildly, but the desired outcomes related to well-being might have a significant overlap.
Okay, finding the shared value beneath the strategy. What about climate change?
Another tough one. You often see clashes between concerns about economic impact and the need for urgent environmental action. PEP could help reveal that both sides are often motivated by a shared concern about human suffering, either immediate economic hardship or future environmental catastrophe, and a desire for long-term human thriving. Understanding that shared root concern can change the conversation.
And control.
Debates around strict controls versus Second Amendment rights often seem intractable. But PEP might uncover a shared deep desire for safety, for preventing violence, for responsible behavior. Again, the how is different, but the fundamental value of community safety might be common ground.
Wealth redistribution.
Arguments about fairness, rewarding hard work, encouraging innovation versus ensuring a safety net and helping the less fortunate. PEP could help frame this as a shared goal of finding a system that both supports those in need and respects earned merit and drives progress. The tension is in finding the right balance, but the underlying values might be closer than they appear. And one more, maybe. Renewable energy.
Sure.
You hear concerns about reliability and grid stability versus the push for cleaner sources. PEP could highlight a shared value for well-considered, evidence-based policy that weighs all the pros and cons, including the impact on vulnerable populations and long-term sustainability. The goal isn't necessarily immediate agreement, but a more nuanced discussion based on shared values like prudence and well-being.
So across these really divisive issues, the takeaway is that PEP provides a way to look deeper.
Exactly. To identify those shared values, frame the conversation around them, and, as you said, steelman the other perspective. That's how it builds bridges. It transforms potential conflicts.
It really feels like a powerful shift in perspective. So wrapping up our deep dive into Chapter 20 of A Practical Empath, this PEP system seems to have a truly profound potential impact on leadership.
It really does. From helping leaders manage their own emotional state to building trust and inspiring their teams.
And especially, as we just discussed, navigating those really complex, difficult conversations and debates by finding that common human ground. It's a practical toolkit.
It is. Which leads to a final thought, maybe building on the book's ideas.
Go for it.
In a world that feels increasingly defined by disagreement, polarization, just imagine for a moment, how might our daily interactions, our team meetings, even those huge public debates, how might they change if leaders, if everyone, really focus on steelmanning the other side, on genuinely searching for the shared human values beneath the surface arguments?
That's definitely something to think about, how different things might look. A powerful question to end on.